Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, so before we start, we should tell people this is going to be a short podcast.
Yep. And it's not because we're being held hostage or anything. It's just a quieter week. And we want to get home and eat, go to Thanksgiving turkeys.
Right. And if we were being held hostage, we would have some kind of code phrase. Let's come up with that now. What is our code phrase? If we're being held hostage, we will say...
I'm going to say I'm not being held hostage. I'm sarcastically.
Oh, okay. Like that, that's your plan? Like,
it's not like I'm being held hostage.
David, it sounds like that's what you just said.
Yeah.
To be clear, we are not being held hostage. and no one needs to burst into the store and save us.
I will blink my eyes in like a weird pattern to confirm it.
Okay.
I'm going to do that over audio.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a problem with the podcast.
Are we only talking about podcast-wise?
Yes, only the podcast.
All right. Well, I'll make a little like clicking sound if you don't hear the...
I don't think anybody heard that.
Well, it was audible if you were here. but a series of insect-like clicks will confirm that I am not being held hostage.
No, that should confirm that you are being held hostage. I think this.
I'm sure I'll remember when it comes around.
Okay, Dave's no help. Nick, what's our signal? We need a signal because clearly this hadn't come up until we started talking, and now I feel like we need some kind of signal for.
Are you expecting us to be held hostage at some point?
No, but you want to be prepared.
This is Trump's future. Of course, we're going to be held hostage. You know it's going to be neo Nazis.
What are we going to? What will we say that is nothing? Oh, we will talk about. I'll talk about how much I love Bendis' comics. Oh crap, that's already happened.
If you hear Randy talk about his love for Deadpool, you know things have gone wrong.
That's true.
That could happen. I think, you know, here's some other one. We start talking about how we were all doing a reread of G.I. Joe, and it did not hold up.
There you go. That's the secret. Yeah.
Or if we all hate Suicide Squad.
And we'll end with no Joe.
Yeah, if that ever happens, we're being held hostage, and you all need to come rescue us.
Yes.
That business out of the way.
Yes.
Let's get on to this very short podcast. There's not a lot of news this week. And
I honestly think it is because people are gearing up for sort of like the for Thanksgiving, and so there was just a quieter week.
I agree. It's respect for the turkeys.
I'm sure that's it.
Yeah, and the comics week, though there's some good stuff in there, is kind of a lighter week. So we're actually just each have one pick. No backup picks this week.
Yeah, but we'll chat up a few other notables.
Yeah. And then we don't really have any topics. Like, we've sort of exhausted all our topics of late, so...
I don't want to talk about Arkham Horror.
Dave's going to talk about Arkham Horror. There will be no spoiler breaks this time, or no music breaks. We're just going to give it one big big podcast.
Oh, my God.
And Nick and I have
bathroom
been...
breaks?
Nick and I have been playing Overwatch, and that's pretty much what we've been doing.
Yeah, and every free time, that is what we do.
So, unless you guys want us to talk about Overwatch for, like, 20 minutes, which we can...
Oh, we totally can. Yeah. They put new game
Believe
modes in
me,
there.
They're... They can. I'm not being held hostage.
New game modes, new maps. There's a lot of stuff in there.
All right, so let's talk about the news we actually have. First of all, we have Black Friday coming up on, oddly enough, Friday.
Right.
And we've talked about this before, but just in case you guys don't know, it is every $25 you spend, you get $5 in gift certificates. If you're a card member... Rogue card member, bring in your Rogue card, show us your Rogue card, and say, hey, give me my special Rogue card privileges,
yep.
Or something like that. And you will get $5 for every $20 you spend. So if you've had your eye on a big game, on one of the cool statues we've got.
I believe Blood Bowl is going to be hitting that Friday.
Yep, Blood Bowl will be out.
So that's going to be one of those big games. It'd be perfect
yep.
to drop this the card
But there's
on.
Some really awesome new statues that have hit recently.
Yeah, a couple of those new bombshells are good. Yeah,
and there's that trio of C-3PO, R2-D2, and BB-8.
Yep.
That's really awesome.
The ever-popular alien xenomorph.
Yep. Yeah. All of which would be great gifts for people. Also, Seafall, the new legacy game
yes.
we have. Yeah. The Betrayal of the House of the Hill expansion.
Yep.
There's a number of cool
Pandemic
games.
Reign of Cthulhu.
There's also, we just have the one copy left, but we have the Claws hardcover.
Oh, right. Grant Morrison's Claws. Yeah.
I'm sure we can point you to any number of cool graphic novels. Oh, it's been a pretty good year for comics. So, yeah, come in, do some Black Friday shopping with us. We will not be crazy like, Walmart and Target. There won't be people trying to stomp
just wake
you.
Up, have a nice breakfast. Come
there's
in
some hustle and bustle here. But yeah, you're not going to get trampled. In fact, it's all for comparatively, it's chill.
Yeah.
This is where you come for your chill Black Friday.
Chill Black Friday. All right, there's been a couple new trailers out. First, I want to talk about the Cars 3 teaser, which I'm the only one who saw.
Yeah.
This is a weirdly dark. You remember how, like, Toy Story 3, which Dave hasn't seen, is weirdly dark?
Yes.
This, like, is it actually weirdly dark?
Yeah, it seems to be like it seems to be about sort of ending things and how all things must end and aging and that kind of thing. And Pixar is not afraid to go dark. No. What's weird is Cars as a whole, as a franchise, nobody holds up as, like, the best. Like, I like Cars.
I thought it was just okay.
Everybody seemed to hate...
That's more typical of it, or hatred.
Everybody seems to hate Cars 2. I didn't even... Cars 2 is the only Pixar movie I've never seen. I guess Good Dinosaur is technically a Pixar movie, so I haven't seen that one either.
I haven't seen Good Dinosaur. I haven't seen Monster University.
I saw Monster Cars University. 2. It is exactly okay. So them doing a Cars 3 is kind of a surprise, but them doing, like, a darker version of it is particularly weird. It is a strange teaser.
But the way you described it is basically Lightning McQueen is going into sort of the Paul Newman role, right?
Yeah, they're doing sort of the Doc Hudson thing where it's, like, the end of his career and he gets a bad career-ending accident and...
Doc Hudson?
Yeah, the Paul Newman's character from the first Cars.
I don't remember their names.
Oh. Wow, Dave. Wow. They're Cars.
I think I saw it once.
And they have identities. Dave doesn't care about Cars.
I'm actually one of the Cars defenders. I think it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, so good. You must have seen it once.
Could have been twice. It's conceivable.
But the trailer we're actually all excited about is Kong Skull Island.
Okay, hold on a second. I got to backtrack on the Cars one.
Yep.
So what was the thing? There was something like where he's like in some kind of fiery accident or
something.
Yeah,
it's like it's just showing like it's showing a race and there's like a big fiery accident. And then it shows the Cars 3 logo.
Here's what my theory is.
Yep.
Aside from them just wanting to do something different, weirdly picking the third one to do their Empire Strikes Back dark story.
Sure.
What if, I think these all do well because NASCAR and stuff like that, and people and kids love cars.
Yep.
So they're all going to do well no matter what. Maybe the animators are sick of it, and they're like, let's just make this as messed up as possible and warp these kids.
Or, you know, another possibility is that he's in an accident and he gets remade into a different looking car, just so the animators aren't bored with the same.
Probably same like he'll never be the same.
What if they're going to remake him and it's going to be...
a hybrid.
what if they're going to remake him and Vin Diesel's going to voice him now and it's going to be Fast and the Furious 9, Cars 3?
That would be unexpected.
Tell me you wouldn't see that movie.
Paul Walker is back as a car.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, that's a little messed up.
It's messed up. I take it back.
Way to go.
Delete that from the podcast.
Well, that was darker than the Cars 3 season.
I was just getting in the spirit of it. All right.
Now
Kong
can we
Skull
talk?
Island, I guess.
All right. Kong Skull Island. Giant monkey versus 70s military.
Bonkers ass trailer.
Yes, it
is. Throw in John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly playing a role. We were joking about this.
He's Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now.
No, because he's not that crazy. He seems more like goofy crazy.
Right, but it's like a spin on that guy who's been like, he's been behind enemy lines basically so long.
It's like a character out of MASH.
He's gone native. Yeah.
Moved into this Skull Island.
Well, he's like, he's got a katana. I feel like he's a guy who sort of went native.
Yeah.
After the end of World War II and just stayed on the Skull Island. Like, I think he's a World War II vet or something, probably.
Yeah, that would sort of make sense. Or he might have been, like, some sort of special ops team that investigated it once and got stuck there.
At any rate, John C. Reilly looks like, we were joking, basically this is like a thing he's like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. He just showed up in that costume. He's like, you guys can film or not, but this is what I'll be doing.
Wild hair and beard. Yeah. And yeah, he just commandeered it.
And I'm for that.
I am also for it. The first time I saw the trailer, I was like, I like that trailer, I think, but that was kind of goofy and weird, and I didn't know what to make of it, because there's, like, serious parts of the trailer.
Sure.
The thing where the pilot is like, is that a monkey?
Yeah.
And then just, like, this like, whole tree goes right through their copter, and I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's pretty messed up. But they also they began with some Creedence Clearwater Revival, which is as good a way to begin a 70s era Vietnam movie as you're going to get from me. And then it takes these, like, there's comedic moments in it, and there's, like, sort of serious ominous moments.
There's some action moments too.
Yeah,
I liked how the you see that the sort of native tribes there, they have this cool, like, almost like camouflage thing where
that
they
was
sort of
cool.
melt against these backgrounds, and even like they have like. there's like Kong mural sort of thing, but you can only see it looking head on. You know, like it doesn't. It looks like gibberish from the side, but then when you stare at it head on, it kind of comes into place. Just the same way that they appear out of their sort of backgrounds.
You know what? You know what this reminds me of? Reminds me of what I liked about, say, The Mummy. Uh-huh. Where it was sort of about a different. It was like it made the monster like part of a culture, basically.
Yeah. Right.
And also, I'm gonna defend Peter Jackson's Kong here for a minute, because what I liked about Peter Jackson's Kong was that it suggested there was more to the movie than just a big giant ape. Like there was the insects.
Right, it was like a lost world.
It was a lost world, and they're definitely doing that here. It's like there's other monsters, like people who like kaiju stuff, like the
skull crawlers.
Skull crawlers, yeah. You know what? That's stupid. But now that I say it, you call them whatever you want.
His delivery on that is really what makes it.
Yeah.
Also, his little bit at the end, it's like, I like you guys. We're all going to die. You shouldn't have come here.
Yeah. John C. Reilly's going to run away with that movie.
Yeah. However, and that's a movie with Samuel Jackson.
I was going to say, there's Samuel Jackson, there's John Goodman, there's Tom Hiddleston.
There's a few other people,
Yeah, honestly, it's Hiddleston and is it Brie Larson are the two. They look like sort of the two normally
Loki and love Captain interesting Marvel.
People. and sort of are the least interesting ones to me in the trailer.
Yeah.
You know, they may be fine in it, but what do you call it? Goodman here is channeling a little bit of that creepy vibe that he had in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
Where you know, it seems like maybe he knew what they were getting into, and he might be sort of manipulating the soldiers here to kind of try and I don't know if they're trying to kill Kong or bring him back, bring out probably evidence.
Bring him back to display him in New York City, because that's what they always want to do with Kong.
That is what you always do if you've got Kong.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, if we didn't mention, is much bigger in this than he usually is.
Yeah.
He is crazy huge. It is, Randy, you mentioned earlier, it is very CG looking, and you know, I think most of it looks pretty good, but we also know that early on there's, you know, they always are working on these shots.
It's always a little rough, yeah.
It's still going to be CGE. I don't know how it'll compare ultimately to Peter Jackson's, which had a lot. We'll see if it holds up, but I like the design on it.
Yeah.
The creatures, these skull crawlers, look pretty cool. And there's this great series of shots at the end where everybody's like kicking ass, and John C. Reilly has his katana or whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, it looks like a blast, and I need to rewatch the trailer again now, just having talked about it.
It is a bonkers trailer. I'm going to go on record as saying this is probably going to be a disappointing movie, but it's going to remain one of those great trailers.
Yeah, it's possible. I could easily see that being
this one. I can't remember.
I don't know.
No one good? No one notable?
It's George Lucas is directing.
Let's say it's John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly is writing, directing, and starring in, and producing.
It's the movie he's always wanted to make.
And if that was the case,
they're motion capturing John C. Reilly for Kong. John C. Reilly is all. This is his being John Malkovich.
Right.
Yeah, but it's instead of a weird indie movie.
John C. Reilly's Art House Kong.
Yes, Art House Kong.
It's a little indie King Kong movie.
Yeah. And then the last bit of news, this is actually really exciting. Kung Fu Panda director Mark Osborne is going to be doing the Bone animated movie.
Right. Bone from the Jeff Smith's now famous comic, you know, cult comic sort of in its day, like a very well-known indie comic, but now, because Scholastic Books picked it up, a very well-known, especially among kids.
Yeah.
They got a good director. Well, I've never seen Kung Fu Panda, but
Kung Fu Panda's great.
People seem to like it.
Kung Fu Panda's really good. And it boggles my mind that they have not animated Bone before now.
Well, you know what? I wonder if its sort of lack of clout might have kept it back. Before it got picked up by Scholastic, I remember they did a series of adventure games, I think from Telltale.
Yeah, Telltale did.
And they were okay.
They weren't great games as part of the
plot. They weren't great. Yeah, that was kind of point-and-click adventures. But I still remember like the comedic timing felt a little bit like it was too close to the style of the I know it's a beloved game, but what's the Monkey Island one?
Yeah,
but like just that it had a retro feel to it. It didn't feel like it was as keeping up with the era it was coming out in. And I wonder if I'm sure it seemed like a good idea at the time, but Jeff Smith may not have made the best of decisions early on. And it may have been there. Finally, there was enough momentum after it got the Scholastic Books, and a lot of people had taken notice of it. A lot of kids had read it.
Yeah, but it's been Scholastic Books for like 5 or 10 years now at this point.
Yeah, probably like 10 years.
I'm just surprised that it's taken this long, but I'm excited. I really think this is a movie that will do really well. And
do you think they'll try and do it all in one movie? Kind of cover the main points.
I hope not. I hope that there'll be a trilogy or something.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know quite what the obvious you know, that it's a little bit like Lord of the Rings in the sense that there's not obvious stopping points.
That's
like
true.
There's not actually, Lord of the Rings may have more obvious stopping points where Bone kind of tends to intertwine its stories all along. But you could probably do a little bit of rearranging and stuff to heighten, you know, some scenes here and there and create a satisfying, you know, ending for the first movie, but that will lead into a follow-up.
Well, if Peter Jackson was doing it, he would do it as 10 movies, since there are 9 graphic novels and he always expands.
That's right.
10 individual movies, each one covering one graphic novel and expanding upon it in such a way as to put you to sleep before you leave the theater.
And then, of course, we'll take Rose and do that.
And then Rose trilogy. Will be a trilogy. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'll remind you, The Hobbit, it was the big screw-up, but I would say that most people would agree that the Lord of the Rings ones came out pretty good.
I guess. I've soured on them over the years.
Yeah, but that's you.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to backtrack just for a second.
Yep.
The director, I didn't find out, is Jordan Vogt Roberts, who's an indie guy. He's done one movie called The Kings of Summer and a bunch of television. Randy, he did direct a couple of 4 episodes of You're the Worst.
Oh, okay. That is a weird fit for Kong, by the way.
He also, Dave, weirdly, is rumored to be the director on the Metal Gear Solid movie.
Oh my god. This guy's taking weird projects. Well, you know what? I mean, here's the thing. You said it's a weird fit for Kong. That trailer is a weird fit for comedy.
That's true. Yeah. I'm just saying, You're the Worst is a dark comedy about relationships in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. There is no part of that where I look at it and go, that guy should do a movie about giant apes.
Right.
But what if You're the Worst was, you know, their leads were giant apes?
It's an interesting, You're the Worst, what if they were both giant apes?
Or what if John C. Reilly got loose with a katana?
That's true, yeah.
Well, that I could see.
That actually would work on You're the Worst. Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe that's where the gestation of the movie was. He wanted to do a John C. Reilly katana movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, what if we CGI'd a monkey in it? And they're like, it's brilliant. Print it.
Yeah, that's what this was. It was a John C. Reilly character comedy.
Yeah.
And they're like, look, to sell it to studio, we're going to have to add King Kong. I think that makes the most sense.
We just wanted it to be about a silly guy who in the 70s got stuck on an island.
Yeah, that's what this was. This was
but what if the island was Kong?
This was a period wacky buddy comedy between Samuel Jackson's Modern Day Soldier and John C. Reilly's Lost on the Island Soldier. And they're like, look, we can't sell this in foreign markets unless you had a giant monkey to it.
They're like, whatever sells.
Whatever sells. Yeah. I think that makes a lot
of
sense.
Let's run with this.
Yeah.
Start repeating it often enough.
And it will be true.
Yeah.
This should be on deadline by the end of the week. all right. So let's move on to comics for the week. Like we said, it is sort of a lighter week than usual. But my pick this week is one that I've been talking up. And it's worth picking up in trade. And I believe we have the entire story arc that I'm going to be talking about, which is Captain Marvel number 10. This is by Ruth Fletcher Gage and Christos Gage, who, among other things, wrote on the Daredevil series for Netflix.
And Randy, by all traditions, Captain Marvel should be the series where, because of Civil War II, the character is now permanently ruined.
Yes. No.
But they have resisted it.
They did a great job. She's great here. And this was this is her and Alpha Flight, which has been kind of a fun
fit. They've been the backup team or sort of part of her team, her mission team, right?
This is and this is basically showing the sort of nuance of Captain Marvel, that painting her as someone who, even though in Civil War she's been the I'm right and you're wrong person,
she's kind of heavy.
This is showing her sort of self-doubt and how she's being manipulated. And the big bad here revealed is an old Alpha Flight villain. I won't give it away, but I was so delighted to see. I had to stop and show it to Dave.
Yep. This is a character that you probably have to be an Alpha Flight kind of fan, especially the early days, to even know who this is.
Yep.
But if you know much about Alpha Flight at all, you may guess at who it is.
I was super happy to see it.
They got like one big villain, and it ain't Tundra.
And then when that villain is throwing down with Captain Marvel, he pulls out an artifact of power.
This was crazy.
And that artifact has been in, I believe, exactly one issue of a comic book in Secret Wars 2's Iron Man tie-in. And not only, Dave, I didn't get to the point where I showed you that, not only do they use that artifact of power, they use its original wielder in a really clever way.
Oh, wow.
So I was delighted as an old school fan. This gave me some of the same fun thrills I've had reading like Sam Wilson, Captain America, where it's like, oh wow, some people do remember the 80s superhero comics and they're using it well. Mm-hmm. So this is a very specific pick for a very specific audience.
Yes.
But if you're like me, you grew up on these 80s comics, you will giggle with glee reading this comic.
Or you're just an Alpha Flight junkie.
Or if you're an Alpha Flight junkie. Dave?
Also, by the way, there's help if you're an Alpha Flight junkie.
Yeah.
Call the hotline.
Yeah, you can get Alpha Flight methadone.
Am I up?
Yeah, you're up.
All right, so there's a sort of a powerhouse team that's on my pick. Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire on a book called After Death, or AD.
So big they couldn't be contained by regular comic size.
That's right. This is closer to a like magazine size.
Yeah.
And it's got like a like almost like a canvas type cover on it, which is really cool. It's from Image Comics with Scott Snyder writing and Jeff Lemire on the art duties. I'd forgotten this was coming out, to be honest. And so here's the interesting thing. This runs between normal comic book stuff and kind of text with kind of illustrations at times. I'd say it's about equal parts, maybe more comic book, but a decent bit of text. And so I haven't finished reading it, so it could super start stinking on the last page, but I don't think it will. And in the first, you know, the stuff that I've read is really intriguing. This is an opportunity for Scott Snyder to, I guess, indulge his writer stuff a little bit in a way that he does. He can't. I mean, you know, obviously, anything he writes, he can. But because this does give a little bit more space for his prose to breathe, and I really like it. It starts with this. It's almost some of these parts sound semi-autobiographical until it becomes sort of apocalyptic, probably.
Okay.
And in fact, it reminded me of a very creepy story I heard in a podcast about. Like, I guess this is something that kids maybe do in school. This like project where you release balloons. And in this case, there's a contest to see how far the farthest one goes. They have like a message on it, mm-hmm. and if you get it, you're supposed to call the school. And he's talking. This is
the message. I'm not being held hostage.
Yes. This is all narrated from the, or at least initially from the point of view of a like a 6-year-old kid who's actually recounting his first memory. Mm-hmm. It begins by saying, someone once told me that all the clues to your life lie in your first memory. And so that's what this initial thing is. And it's about a sort of bad trip that's happening with his parents to in Florida in 1982. And they find one of these balloons, and there's a prize associated with it. And there's all this like nice the detail and the writing in this is actually really really amazing. Like just this, it sounds, I don't know if it sounds like a particularly intriguing scenario in and of itself, but the writing is really strong. They find out that like when they call the school that they were in fact the farthest place. Hmm. But and then the prize is I think they call it like a home video game system, which for 1982 means it was an Atari.
Yep.
Probably. But that they're like, oh, sorry, but the contest ended 2 weeks ago. And his dad, who's been having some sort of like work problems and seems to have maybe some emotional problems, starts flipping out. And some weird stuff happens. And this anecdote ends on sort of a dark note. And then suddenly you are in what I can only describe as kind of an apocalyptic future.
Okay.
Which is presented as the present.
Okay.
It's got the little now caption. And there is, like, some sort of weird alien-type life forms. There's weird farming going on, and they call it, it's 825 AD, which they say is indeed after death. And, let's see, I'm trying to recall. Is this the kid? I think it's the.
So, does this take place in like an afterlife type thing? Is that seem
like. I don't think it's an afterlife, or if it is, I mean, it feels more weird extraterrestrially almost.
Like after death of the earth or something?
Yeah, but I can't quite, I haven't pinned it down yet. There's stuff that's happening that seems like it could be borderline magic, and then, but like it could be weird science-y stuff and just lensed through a kid's eyes. And it does show him like when he has grown up in this and like he's 40 at this point. So it's hard to describe. This is I will say beautifully illustrated with that sort of watercolor look that anybody who's ever seen Lemire's own books is familiar with. But it's particularly nice on this paper. I like the what looks like an old type. All the text in it has the look of old typewriter. And the fascinating thing about this, I mean, more than anything, it sort of reminded me of like maybe like prose science fiction, and especially like one of those sci-fi books where you kind of pick it up and you are not quite sure where it is headed. Because yeah. I am not quite sure where this is headed.
Right.
I don't know if it bounces around between the two eras. It looks like it does mostly take place in this future, but you know, actually, it looks like I'm mistaken. There is some more flashback stuff in this, but it was super intriguing, and I thought that Snyder's writing was very powerful. So yeah, I'm easily recommending people check this out. We think it's going to be what, 3 issues?
I believe it's 3 issues.
3 of these big old oversized issues. This was so big, I almost thought like it's effectively like a graphic novel, and that this might be it. But three should make for a nice meaty story.
Or it might be 2. I don't know. It's more than 1.
Whatever. But yeah, if you are a Scott Snyder person, if you are a Jeff Lemire person, or if you kind of like kind of offbeat stuff, definitely take a peek at it. I feel like it's easily worth picking up. Nick,
well, mine is Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme #2. Has still a little bit of time travel involved, yep. Like ED After Death, but sure. Mine definitely has more magic, considering okay. We're dealing with a team composed of all the latest and greatest Sorcerer Supremes from across time.
I know that there's Merlin in that mix. Is he still
Merlin
in there?
Had a bit of an accident at the end of the first issue.
You mean like he pooped himself?
Yes.
But they're all going up against this big bad that I believe Merlin... in a sense, created or caused.
Is it Mordred?
It's not Mordred. Thank God.
Okay.
But keep guessing, Dave.
Is it Morgan Le Fay?
No.
No.
Is it...
Nope.
No, but I liked that this one had a heavier focus on Wiccan, which...
I was going to say, their future Wiccan I really like.
Who becomes the Sorcerer Supreme sometime after
Strange.
So they're
traveling in the future. For some reason, I guess I was...
Yeah, basically, Merlin... traveled all over the place collecting different Sorcerer Supreme. And Wiccan was one of them.
Yeah, he grabbed them from the past.
One quick question before you proceed. How big a role does Doctor Strange play in this ensemble story?
He's essentially the lead.
Yeah, he's the lead.
Okay.
He's not really liked by many of the others because they see him as having no magic. Because
at the moment, he has no magic.
Thing,
right? Does he have magic weapons and stuff like in the book?
Yeah. But Wiccan is there, and I love the fact that we get to see him sort of have his family.
Yeah, that was nice.
It was a really nice nod, and I like seeing Teddy and all the other people. And then we get to see him kind of being a badass. And then we swap back to the fight that they were fighting in the first issue, where we get to see a lot of the other Sorcerer Supreme do really cool stuff.
I would assume that a unified team of Sorcerer Supreme would be pretty damn powerful.
I like all these characters.
Yeah, they do cool things on their own, but they don't play well with each other because they don't usually
play
well.
That makes sense. It's a bunch of leaders.
There's also kind of a cool conflict with the Ancient One, who is actually his younger version of himself. So it's
the
like
young
before
ancient
he
one.
Before he became the Ancient One,
sexy young Ancient One.
Yes. But I really like a lot of the stuff that Robbie Thompson is bringing to the table. There's just some neat ideas involved. I like the team aspect.
What's Robbie Thompson's claim to fame?
Silk.
He worked on Supernatural. He's been one of the big but Silk is his big comic thing.
Got it.
But honestly, the biggest draw for this is the artwork, and it's Javier Rodriguez.
The guy who was doing Spider-Woman up till recently.
I mean, it's just beautiful.
Yep.
Kind of these vast landscapes of kind of... there's a mindless one that's amazing looking.
I love that. Yeah, one of the sorcerers has a mindless one who is converted to his familiar, basically.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
I forget which Sorcerer Supreme that was. If it's
the designs for all the sorcerers is really good. The characters, I mean,
isn't Isaac Newton?
You're right. That is Isaac Newton. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's kind of a jerk.
Yep.
But you know, whatever. And I don't know. I like the big bad that they're going up against. It feels very much in line with what Jason Aaron did with his empirical storyline.
Yeah, it does.
So it kind of feels part and parcel there. And I like Stephen Strange, you know, getting to know these people and sort of, you know, befriend them. And, you know, there's also just problems as well.
One of the weird things in any Doctor Strange book is, you know, other than Wong, traditionally he doesn't have like a lot of people to interact with and talk to.
Yeah.
He's kind of a one-man show. And So putting him with other Sorcerers Supreme is an interesting notion, because, and of course they all have, I guess, the same problem. They're all sort of used to being lone wolves. Sure.
And it also feels like we're going to get backstories for all the different Sorcerers Supreme, and sort of moments of them, why they're here, why Merlin chose them. And I think that's going to be a driving force for me to seeing some of these other characters get a bit more screen time, because they're interesting. They're sort of like the Medico Mystico from...
I think
Jason Aaron's.
Initially,
he looks awesome, but we want to know more about him. I think some of these are the same way. We're going to get more about them.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to the future issues where we get like a solo look at some of these characters. What else is on your list?
The rest of mine, Civil War II, number 7, does hit. It is an interesting penultimate issue.
Yep.
There's some cool stuff involved.
Very talky, very Bendis-y.
Very talky, very Bendis-y. even connecting to some of other Bendis's works.
Yep.
The second issue of Teen Titans, which I think is continuing to be just a really good series. Benjamin Percy has done a lot with building this team in a very short time. And this one we get...
Who's Benjamin Percy?
He's the guy who's writing Green Arrow at the moment.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He's got that super crazy deep voice.
Yeah, he's got the ultra deep voice.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody go on YouTube and type in, like, DC Benjamin Percy or whatever. That dude is... It's crazy. It sounds fake.
Yep.
It sounds like somebody putting on a voice.
Yep.
Yeah. The second issue of Genndy Tartakovsky's Cage... which was pretty great. I mean, I loved it.
It's the crazy 70s exploitation style one.
Yep. The first issue of Venom, which is interesting.
Venom in this? I didn't get around to reading it.
It's a new character.
What? Yeah, but it's back to sort of classic Venom.
Okay.
It does have a spin on it, so okay. I don't want to spoil that. But then the 13th issue, which is a sort of the jumping on point for Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, as Amadeus Cho sort of heralds in this young girl who is possibly the smartest person on the planet, even like rivaling like Reed Richards.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know how to have practical application of how to use those smarts, which is interesting. The first issue of The Ultimates, which is just continuing.
This is like the third first issue of The Ultimates, right?
It feels that way. But this is still Al Ewing, Travel Foreman. But it is kind of a reshuffling of the table since T'Challa broke up The Ultimates.
They've been playing some major roles, especially in some of the events going on, so it does seem like it's probably... Nick, would you... I don't know if you've read it yet, but...
No, I did.
Do you feel like it'd be decent for somebody who's, like, never read the book and wants to see what they're all about?
There's a lot of stuff that you kind of just infer. I mean, there's relationships between Monica Rambeau and Blue Marvel, although her name now is Spectrum, which I'm not super fond of that name.
No. Nope.
Whatever. And there are some villains that they fought before that show back up, but it's an interesting first issue and has kind of a fun little tease at the end. And then I will say that the fourth issue of Black Monday Murders comes out tomorrow, Jonathan Hickman book, and there's also reprints of 1, 2, and 3 that hit. So if you have not read that one, I would definitely recommend it.
Dave, what's on your stack?
Let's see. Yes. You know what? I want to quick mention. I don't have it back here, but among the DC Super Pet stuffed animals, we got both of which, but one in particular made Tila squeal with joy this morning, and they are both awesome. There's a Jokerfish.
Sure.
Which looks like a little crazy, like Super Mario water level Jokerfish.
Yes.
And then there is Osito, a.k.a. Bane's teddy bear.
Okay.
It's like a little Bane bear. It is adorbs, and everybody should see it and buy it and hug it.
I feel like Nick made me order both of those.
I think he was right to.
We shall see.
Yeah. There is a Spider-Man Annual this week, which the cover claims that it has mayhem in Mexico and smash up in Shanghai. Which sounds like a slightly mildly racist 70s kind of stuff. But really the most important thing about this, which has a bunch of different interesting artists on it, is that apparently Wayne Brady, of all people, has written one of these stories.
Yep.
And I don't know if it in any way touches on things you would, like, improv or something like that. But I'm curious to check it out. On the graphic novel front, I was excited to see, because I didn't realize it was coming. I thought it was still finishing the Shadows of the Vampire story, where, Minsk and Boo and their team go up against the super deadly vampire, Count Strahd.
Yep.
In, what is it, the Ravenloft dimension.
Yep.
And then the last thing, this is kind of more of an interest to me as a longtime fan of John Byrne's artwork. He has a coloring book that looks like, I believe it's an original sci-fi story, and he's done some sci-fi one-shots over the years that have been pretty cool. You know, more like conceptual sci-fi mixed with a little bit of kind of Buck Rogers-y sort of stuff sometimes. But what's interesting about this one, aside from his art does look very nice in black and white, is that opposite of each coloring page is a piece of prose from him so that a story unfolds throughout the whole thing. So each one is essentially a pinup from the story. So it's a neat little version of one of the coloring books that's been floating around and so popular lately.
Yep. All right. I want to mention Prowler number 2. I was not super into the first issue, but I like what they did with the second issue, which sort of pits the Prowler against Julia Carpenter, one of the former Spider-Woman, and he's working on behalf of New You, the Jackals sort of group. And this was an interesting issue.
Julia Carpenter, the new Madame Web?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Lake of Fire number 4. This is the penultimate issue of the Knights versus Aliens, which I've been really enjoying from Image Comics. And then I want to mention the Star Wars comics this week. Number 25 concludes the story they've been doing where they had these new stormtroopers, the Scar Squadron. They're like special ops stormtroopers. They all have personalities, and this is them facing off against Han and Leia and Luke and Han's wife, whose name I've forgotten.
His fake wife.
Santa, yes.
Yeah.
It's a really good, fun issue that sort of shows them going up against opposition that's actually worthy of them, which was really fun.
Since people saw that one traitor stormtrooper, people have been like, oh, there's some badasses in there.
Yep.
We got a badass over here.
And then Han Solo concludes with number 5, and it's a really good conclusion. I really like the Han Solo series. They did a fun, you know, big galactic cannonball run style race, mixed in a espionage plot with rebel spies, and then had some really good character work on Han Solo. So this one is one of my favorite of the Star Wars miniseries, and I thought it ended really well. And that's it for our comics for the week. Dave, why don't you tell us about this game that we don't have in stock?
Yeah, this is somewhat painful to talk about because here's the thing. It's a really good game.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we don't know how big the gap is going to be before it seems it's out at all the warehouses.
I would guess not before Christmas. Not until after Christmas.
It's out across town because people have been calling up and they've checked everywhere. But I will talk about it briefly just to say that the game is Arkham Horror. It's the Arkham Horror LCG or Living Card Game.
Yep.
Derived from sort of Arkham Horror concepts from the old from the Fantasy Flight game Arkham board game Arkham Horror.
Yeah.
Where I never fully warmed up to that one, I always found it a little too fiddly and a little hard to tell, like, oh, what do I need to be doing, you know, at any given time. I don't like feeling directionless in games.
Yeah.
This one reminded me of the best stuff that I liked actually about the Pathfinder card game.
Okay.
With its different locations and its ability to upgrade characters between adventures.
Hmm.
In fact, it looks, I think the way that these are probably going to go is that each, there will be like scenarios that comprise, that are made up of, I think, typically 3 adventures.
Okay.
I've played 2 of them so far, and I believe the core game is 2 players. If you happen to have 2 base games, you can, I think, do up to 4 players, but you do have to actually have 2 full base games. You get a certain character. The character has some cool abilities. You build a deck. I think when I played, my brother had pre-built the decks, I think based on like a standard sort of loadout, a suggested deck.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't mess with it too much, although after playing, I've played 2 of the adventures now, both very tightly linked, very strong narrative structure to it, and built up my character and like got some new allies in the deck and some new weapons and stuff, and that was really cool. It's got the Fantasy Flight production value, so it all looks amazing. But like essentially, here's how it began. My brother was playing like I think the hard-boiled detective, and I was playing this girl who's like she's like a little street urchin, but like very tough, very wily, not a good fighter, but super fast, and you know everybody has some sort of you have some basic stats
mm-hmm.
along with their special abilities, and it literally you read a little narrative caption about how you are like in the study at like one of your houses or whatever, and like you start to hear this weird scratching under the floorboards, and when you you know, try to go out into a hallway to see what it is. The door is locked, and so it's like that specific a scenario. And then the cards you're drawing from to deal with. You put out cards that are locations, and you're like literally moving around the house just as you would in Pathfinder, the Pathfinder deck building or card game, going to locations there, dealing with challenges there. If you're both in the same place, you can work together. You're not going to be able to do that all the time. You're going to have to split up and do dangerous things. It's very exciting and tense. Both times that we played, we eked through with narrow victories, and these are the intro scenarios, which I felt were pretty tough, pretty challenging. You know, admittedly, we were learning it as we went, but you know, you don't get weird random monsters. Like, you're not gonna run into a mummy or something in this. This adventure sort of dealt with ghouls and things like that. But like a very specific story unfolds. It's like you, there's even some twists and turns. You make some interesting decisions. By the end of the first one, at the end, you have to make a key decision, as soon as you begin the next one, you will immediately see the effects of it. So it's a really nicely constructed game.
Oh, okay.
It's of the various Lovecraft games I've played in the last few years. I feel like maybe that my favorite might be. Is it Eldritch Horror? Is that the
one that's the
sort of globe hopping?
Yeah.
No, not the dice game. The globe hopping one. Yeah. Elder Sign is up there too, and Mansions of Madness is now really good. But I would put this right now would be in first or second place. It'd be probably like fighting it out with Eldritch Horror, and then after that, I think I'd maybe put Elder Sign or Arkham. I'm sorry, not Arkham Horror. The Mansions of Madness. But anyway, it's way up there if you like Lovecraft or deck-building type games. Definitely a must-play. And I did want to say, it's from some of the same people who I think worked on the Lord of the Rings living card game,
yeah,
which I played a decent bit of with my brother, but I found that every time I played it, if there had been any length of time between when we last played, I had to like relearn a lot of fiddly stuff.
Yeah.
And this is much more approachable. The decks are like half the size. It maintains the flavorful stuff from it, but like they made a much better game, I think, overall, and much more approachable. So everybody should buy it when it comes back into stock.
Yep. all right. That wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that, next time, happy Thanksgiving and
Yo-jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.